When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, welcome to Carcass and Edmonds podcast. I'm Matt, the moderator, DeAndrea, here with Alistair Weaver. How are you?
Busy? I'm good, thanks, Matt.
You're wrapping up all of your stuff, all of your end of the year stuff before you take a little break from Edmonds. You let your staff go home for like, what, 3 days?
we try to get a little break over the holiday season. So we basically, but what it means, you're right, you kind of crush a month into 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah.
So by the time you get, normally what happens, I normally head back to Europe to see the family over Christmas and then generally get ill because I've just exhausted myself in the run up. So we'll see.
But you just went recently. You're not going back now? Or are you going back?
No, we are going back. If people want to feel, see, it sounds very glamorous, eyes back to Europe and then, you know, going to France and the UK. The reality is that it's 11-hour overnight flight with a 4-year-old and a 21-month-old.
Yeah.
So... yeah, it's going to be misery for me. It's going to be misery for anybody else in that area of economy class.
Yeah, I'm not going to go for that reason.
But the flight back is it, and then the flight back is even worse because overnight they sleep a little bit.
Yeah.
On the way back, no sleeping, day flight. So anyway.
Yeah. It's good. I know. It's great to go back and see the family and maybe get a night off while maybe the family watches the kids, but I don't know if it's worth the travel. They should come out here. Also, like, our weather's nice and things are okay.
Yeah, things are fairly okay anyway.
Things are fairly okay. All right, we haven't had a chance to talk about F1 since you were there. Let's get into that a little bit. Did you just hop a flight and go out there? Did you road trip out there? What was the plan? Well, what was the plan? What really happened?
So I very, very stupidly booked a family vacation for Thanksgiving, leaving on the Saturday of the race. So I went out for qualifying and then had to come back and be the dutiful husband routine. I know we talked about this before, but if you know that, I actually used to work in Formula One many years ago. And actually, I've got a little, this is a little aside. I have a little cameo in the, you know, there's been a Keanu Reeves documentary about Braun. It's on Hulu, I think it is. It's been Disney produced. And I have a little cameo. Baby Alistair pops up alongside Keanu Reeves, which is
actually, I think
never
it's
expected
on Disney
that at
Plus.
The time.
Yeah.
Is it Disney Plus? I thought it was
Hulu. Yeah, because it's like, it's the one service I don't think I have. I don't think I subscribe to that. I don't know.
No, it's definitely on Hulu, but Hulu owns Disney now. Disney owns Hulu, don't they?
Maybe so it's on Hulu too, right? But maybe. I don't know. The advertisement was for Disney Plus, but I think they're trying to push it.
So I'm a big Formula One geek, and it was just, you know, but it was so strange because now they were cutting, you know, they were cutting prices, they're trying to get people there because the whole thing had got so crazy expensive. I must confess, I was on a shameless corporate ticket. I'd been invited by Alfa Romeo, and which was great to meet the team. And we went down into the paddock and kind of, you know, wandered around with all the celebrities and influencers. It's all influencers now.
Yeah,
I had a great conversation with somebody from one of the teams who said to me, you know, Formula One loves influencers because they don't ask any questions. They don't get in the way. All they want to do is take a photograph of themselves, like in the pit lane. And then I walked down
and he was talking.
Yeah, and I did it on my Instagram. I went down the pit lane, and there was like this kind of young, beautiful influencer sort of standing there doing the perfect selfie pose. It's really funny if you've never been to a Grand Prix, and particularly if you're, you know, lucky enough to get kind of fairly inside access as I did. It's a crazy world of this circus that travels the globe, 23 races a year now. It's It's mad. And just the everything is to largesse, you know, the scale of the teams, 1,000-person teams, you know, even with a budget cap of 150 million, when you add the key salaries, they're still spending, you know, 250 million. It's everything about it is huge. But it's an amazing experience. And the track and the whole setup was actually much better than I expected. There was a lot of fuss that it was more about the show than the race. But they did a hot lap, and I jumped into a Alfa Giulia Quadrifoglio. I hope I pronounced that wrong. I'm not very good at in Italian accents. Which is kind of like one of those forgotten sports sedans.
Yeah.
500 horsepower, 80,000 bucks. Looks great.
And their SUV version, right?
The Stelvio.
Stelvio.
Yeah.
The Quadrifoglio. Stelvio. That's cool. It sounds good. It's fast. It handles great. I brought one on to Willow Springs with Tanner Faust.
Yeah. They're a cool thing, and just, you know, they're not really in the consciousness. And anyway, we went for a lap of that. And I tell you what, even at the straight at Vegas, it was like at the end of the straight in the Alpha, we were doing 170, and their F1 cars were doing 215. But because you've got all the barriers and you're going down the Vegas strip and you've got all the lights and the buildings, it feels really fast.
Yeah.
And they've just sent me a video of it. It had like a GoPro, and I'm going to post it on Instagram probably later. It'll probably be up by the time you're listening to this, but it was a really cool experience. I'm glad the race exists there. I know there's been a lot of fuss and controversy, but it was a fun event. It really was. I just hope next year they make it a bit more accessible, so you don't just have like corporates and, you know,
well, you know,
the private jet brigade.
I think they're going to be able to learn a little bit from this, you know, because that last couple of weeks leading up to F1, ticket prices started to really drop, and they went from $1,600 down to about $800. And I even talked to some people. They're like, hey, at $800, they're like, I'm just going to go in for the day. I'm just going to go to F1 and find a place to crash for the night and then leave, just go to the Saturday night thing or whatever. And they did, and it was fine. I haven't spoken to anybody yet about Vegas. Like, what was it like sort of getting around? Are you able to get from the airport, or like what can, I assume everybody's just walking at this point because there's no way to get a cab or an Uber.
Well, that was what was weird about it. I expected it to be carnage, and it really wasn't. I flew in, I got there about 10:30 in the morning on the Friday qualifying, and all the circuit was open. So they didn't actually shut the circuit till 5 p.m. So that was kind of strange. I went and had lunch with somebody, then I got a cab down to, I was staying in the Park MGM, and we were literally like going down the main straight. We're going down the strip in this cab at, you know, at 15 miles an hour. And then at 5 o'clock, they shut it, cleaned it up, and, you know, and then the racing began. And that was also one of the reasons why they didn't have any support races. They only had Formula One there. So that was all kind of weird. But I know a lot of locals have been, you went out to SEMA as I did, and people were grumbling about it then. And I think for the locals, it's been a bit of an issue. And the cab drivers were charging $15.
Yeah, just to get in the car. Yeah.
I was like, what? So what, $15 for what? And they were like, it'd be a Formula One surcharge. So, but Vegas didn't feel, and maybe this is part of the reason that it wasn't, you know, wasn't an absolute sellout. Certainly on qualifying day Friday, it didn't feel busy. You know, you've been in massive sporting events, and the whole city feels atmospheric, and it didn't really. It just, you know,
it was a good race. We stayed here in town, but Galpin Aston Martin hosted a Vegas themed F1 watch party at night, like whatever, like 9 to 12 o'clock at night. And they did a great job. It was in the Aston Martin showroom where they have their full bar, and they set up tables like blackjack and different, you know, card tables and stuff. And people were just playing with chips, playing for fun. They had screens everywhere that had a big, you know, you're able to watch and hear the game on, I don't know, 5-6 different screens from all over the place. They had plenty of food. They had plenty of booze because we had our Bravago there. We had our hard seltzer there on site. So
get your little plug in.
Yep. Get my plug in for that. Which everyone should go online to Drink Bravago and order right now. That being said, it was a fun event. And actually, they made it a fun kind of Vegas themed event and allowed us to just get there and have a good time and go home and sleep in our own bed that night. So it wasn't lost on us how nice that was for them to do that. And it was full, man. There was a lot of people that were having a lot of fun.
The other bit that I don't get is just that, as you say, the timings, because qualifying was at midnight. So that's midnight in Vegas is 3 a.m. on the East Coast. And that was the whole idea, I think, was because Europe's waking up. But
yeah,
what is the point of having a U.S. Grand Prix that starts at 3 a.m. for, you know, a big chunk of the country? And yeah, race was like 10 p.m. It's like that's 1 a.m.
I was doing the math on that, too. I was like, they're like, come to Galp and Aston Martin, and we're going to 10 o'clock at night. I'm like, that's kind of my bedtime. So, yeah. I mean, I'll do it, but that's normally when I'm going to sleep. And then, yeah, but you got to look at what time is it in London? What time is it in Japan? Like, what time is it in the rest of the world? How do you make it that the world can watch, the fans around the world can watch the event? I don't know how many people actually did watch the event. I don't know. I'm curious to find out when the dust settles, if it made any money in Vegas or it was just a money losing event. Cause I know they have a 10-year agreement. Certainly the one thing they have to figure out is, and this will come with a little bit of time, is the whole setup and teardown. Now that they've done so much construction and done it before, they need to get that done way faster. Right. Because now they don't have to build a whole building from scratch. They figured out, you know, some of the issues with the circuit and setting up, you know, grandstands and VIP rooms, and all of it is just like temporary stuff. You know, grandstands and VIP suites in the Bellagio fountain and all along the strip, and all the lights and all the power and all the ways that people were trying to watch the race without F1 knowing, you know, all the bridges of the walkways, like by Caesar's Palace. And there's the glass there, and they covered up, they did like vinyl. They covered up the glass. People were just peeling all the vinyl off and watching the race.
But they also did this really bad on a lot of the walkways. They did this really bad, like fabric, you know, that kind of, I don't know, there's probably an expression for it, but you know, where you like the fabric made up of lots of millions of little holes.
Yeah.
So like, it was like kind of watching it through like, you know, a veil, but you could still see the circuit, and then people would be moved on. And there was a lot of stuff. Like, there's a lot of people just trying to like get a peek. And, but at those prices, like, you know, can't be, I mean, the strange thing about watching F1, I suppose it's the same with any motorsport, maybe apart from, you know, some of the oval stuff, is the reality is you see one corner. And so you end up watching most of it on telly anyway.
Right.
But you're in the atmosphere, and it's fun.
But you want to be there for the atmosphere, for the parties, and for the, you know, you want to go with friends, and you want to have a good time out of it. And it's just another event to go to in Vegas, which is a great location, and it's a fun venue, and it's something you haven't done in Vegas before.
Yeah, and the other thing that was really striking, you know, somebody who grew up in an era of like V8s, V10s, even V12s from Ferraris, it was... the new hybrid F1 cars are so quiet. Like, I used to go to Silverstone or Spa and places like that, and you'd have, you know, you'd have your earplugs in, and you couldn't talk to any cars because the things were screaming. Now it's like, it's so quiet this era that you do lose. I mean, you do, though, get a sense of just how fast an F1 car is. Like, you just don't see that on TV. And it's not even, I mean, they were doing like 250 miles an hour. So I mean, it's not necessarily in a straight line. It's just the speed that they carry through the corners is just outrageous. And, you know, and just the whole, it is unlike any other motorsport. And I've been to a couple of IndyCar races, and IndyCar racing does feel like kind of, you know, amateur club motorsport by comparison. And obviously it's not, but it does,
but I enjoy IndyCar. I mean, I've got a lot
of IndyCar friends.
I got a lot of friends that are on teams or race and teams or own teams. And I enjoy going to the Grand Prix of Long Beach which is kind of the, you know, that's the home track for us. So I go to that event. It's fun. I like IndyCar.
I didn't want to sound disparaging. It was more of just like the scale and the money. IndyCar's fantastic.
For sure.
It's proper real. It's real, you know, it's real kind of alpha racing. It's, you know, and obviously the cars are a bit more equal and everything else.
IndyCar is far more accessible. Like, you could go and you can meet the drivers and you can, you know, see what's going on. And it's not like a paparazzi fest or, you know, you can't get anywhere near Lewis Hamilton as he's wearing some crazy looking jumpsuit on his way to the track. it's not quite that. Listen, I'm sure everyone in IndyCar would love it to be that. And I'd love to see IndyCar to grow more and get more attention, but it's a fun event. It's far more accessible.
And I still spent $100 on some overpriced merch. So, you know, take every box.
There you go. All right. So let's shift gears a little bit. And the whole world, meaning probably just the media in America, is talking about Cybertruck.
I think you're right. I think, like, I was looking at the British media, I think everybody's gone a bit nuts for this thing.
Everybody's talking about Cybertruck. Now, Goldberg and I, this week, we were having a little fun because we knew Cybertruck announcement was coming out. And we were like, what happened to the Tesla Roadster? And they announced 6 years ago and took $250 million of deposits on. And, like, haven't heard a peep about that thing, but probably funded Cybertruck. We should get into it a little bit. So I know you guys have one on order. I'm sure one of the things that's going to come up is the sticker shock of what you were promised. Pricing versus what you're going to have to pay, and since you guys are at Edmunds, you're going to have to do it anyway. So talk about jamming an ADM. Talk about jamming a markup down everyone's throat and giving them no choice.
It's not really a sticker shock. Because the reason it's not a sticker shock is that I wasn't at the event this week, but we were on a big shoot, but I was at the original event at SpaceX, the famous one where it was unveiled for the first time and they smashed the windows and everything went a bit pear-shaped. But it was never going to be $40,000. I mean, back then they said, Elon stood there and said, $40,000 on sale in 2021.
Yeah.
And, you know, all like the, you know, all the fanatics, oh, incredible. Like, you know, you're going to get it next, you know, it's like, no, it's not going to happen. It's not going to be $40,000 and you're not going to get it in 2021. And sure enough, you can't. Look, I think it's easy to be cynical, and like the whole. Did you watch the thing online? Did you watch the whole unveil?
I didn't watch the whole unveil. I didn't get a chance to do it, but I've been watching a bunch of the clips that are popping up because it's all being posted everywhere. And I saw the part of the presentation, and Elon Musk has been all over X, putting clips up there. And to his credit, still a showman, still a great salesman. Had a sense of humor to bring back the whatever the metal ball that they throw at it. And
well, it morphed into a baseball though.
Yeah.
It morphed into a baseball, and there's all sorts of talk about 70 miles an hour now and everything else. But it, I mean, as somebody who used to in an old life, like produce events a bit like that, it's such a weird, the whole thing is odd. You know, the production values of the event basically were terrible. Just in terms of like little things like the lighting and just the choreography. But that's also part of the appeal that Elon just kind of stands up and freestyles and has this kind of slightly, you know, curious way of speaking. And everybody has to sort of follow that. And so the whole thing feels strangely sort of weirdly amateurish. But then I also kept, you know, having these little set pieces, and they are fantastic at whipping up social media and everything else. Oh, here we are, like against the 911, and it's towing a 911. And what was extraordinary to me, and this is a bit of like a, I guess something that winds me up a little bit, is how much, particularly, you know, how many people online just quote this stuff verbatim. So, oh, it's, Elon shows a video, he's faster than 911 whilst towing my bar. Oh, it's faster than 911. And you get like even, you know, even people who was trying to present themselves as, you know, analysts or critics or whatever, just quote this stuff verbatim.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's always been a big part of the Tesla appeal. And they, as a Tesla bandwagon, and the only people they invite to the event are people who are going to be this kind of, you know, glorious echo chamber for, you know, how heroic this thing is. And as always with Tesla, there was a lot of kind of, once you starting to dig into it, you realize there's a kind of a lot of sort of BS associated with it. And some curious stuff around, you know, obviously the pricing, and then there's this weird range extender. Did you see that? The range extender?
I saw, yeah, that there's a battery. For those of you guys who haven't followed, we'll get into some of the specs on this, but some of the options that he presented was, one, if you want a spare tire, it goes in the bed of the truck. So it doesn't make the bed of the truck all that useful, because if you want the optional spare tire, it's in the bed of the truck.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet. Well, then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, Essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
And when you say in the bed, it's literally sat on the bed of the truck. And so it's not like a Rivian where it goes underneath the bed. It's
right.
No, it's just it's a tire in the bed of the truck.
In the bed of the truck with a ratchet strap or whatever. Like, that's what it is. It was an interesting idea where he said, look, we'll get into range and specs, but if you want a range extender battery, a battery that you can bring with you or take out, it goes in the bed of the truck. So there's this battery that goes in the bed of the truck. I don't know that they got into the specs. Again, I didn't watch the whole thing. I don't know if it's something somebody can lift, if it takes two or three people. I don't know what it's going to cost. I imagine that there's probably going to be some sort of like rental program. So you can go, hey, I got to do a road trip. Can I rent one of these things? Or like, how do I do that? Can I rent it and get it installed for my trip and then give it back in a week? I'm not sure.
We were talking about this as a team yesterday, like how, because again, it's a classic telling. There's a lot of things that are a little bit vague, but I mean, the basic premise of this is, so they've obviously looked at the range of the truck and gone, you know, we haven't got enough. We haven't got the range that we were promising, and we haven't got enough space to stuff more batteries in, and we haven't got better battery technology. So basically, how do we do this? Well, if we want to get close to, you know, 400 or 500 miles of range, then we're going to have to add. So it's a bit like, you know, you get those things to your iPhone where you basically bolt on a battery.
Yeah.
And then it makes your phone big and heavy and doesn't fit in your pocket very well. It's that. So, but we reckon it weighs about 400 pounds. So it's not like an iPhone battery at all. And also, it's going to have to be waterproof. It's going to have to be secure. You know, this is not, this is not a small current. And so how we trying to figure out, like, can't imagine a world in which, you know, this thing stays in the back of the garage. And then, you know, you get an army of buddies around to kind of pick it up and stick it in and plug it in. So, but if it's permanent or even semi-permanent, it's kind of half your bed gone. So. Yes.
And I don't think you can carry the spare tire and the battery.
Well, not if you want to carry anything else. You might get a handbag. and it's like, it looks like a bit like a gun case, but gun cases are smaller, or a toolbox.
Almost like a giant Pelican case.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. A giant integrated Pelican case. So
a bad idea if you could put stuff in it, but if there's a battery in it the whole time, I don't mind the idea of having a secure waterproof case in the bed of the truck that would be removable and lightweight, but that's not what it is.
And then it's also, if you also think about it from a dynamic perspective, like, you've suddenly put 400 pounds pretty high up admittedly it's pretty much in the center of the truck, but it's also pretty high up. So that's going to have impacts on ride and handling and all, even with the air suspension, all that good stuff. So do you know what, though? I think it's like easy to be cynical about Tesla, and I get pretty wound up by all the nonsense and some of the sort of, you know, claims that they make and nothing ever's on time, blah, blah, blah. But I think it's cool. You know, like, I looked at it and thought, like,
well, so I was going to ask one of those. Is like, how is it as a truck? Is it going to be a cool truck?
I think I did an interview with one of the business publications this week about this, which was quite interesting. And if you go back to the original announcement, it was they put up a picture of the F-150, of the Ram, the Silverado, and it's like, we're going to take over the American truck market, pretty much. And now when you look at the sort of narrative, it's much more, this is going to be like a cool lifestyle thing for people who buy Teslas. And most people who are buying them are going to be paying like $80,000 plus.
Yeah.
Now, Lightnings and things like that are also getting on for that money. So it's not like crazy expensive. Well, it's expensive, but not in relative terms. It's not outrageous. But it does seem to have like stepped away from being, you know, the working heartbeat of America to actually a plaything. And Rivian were quite open about their truck, the R1T, being really, it's a skiing car, it's a surf wagon, it's
still a premium vehicle. In terms of price, these are all premium vehicles. But yes, but to your point, there isn't another full size truck or even something a little smaller that's EV and has decent specs on it that comes anywhere near that, you know, that blows it away in price. They're all about the same. So the price isn't really that big of a deal. It's just, we're not going to get a $40,000, $45,000, or even $50,000 EV.
And I don't think they're going to do the volume. There's even an argument that this thing is like, they're obviously had a lot of difficulties creating this thing. It's probably very expensive to produce. So there's an argument that they probably don't want to sell too many. You know, if you look at what Tesla is today, Tesla is basically a mainstream brand pumping volume, making now what are in modern terms, relatively conventional electric cars. The Model 3 and the Model Y are, you know, relatively, you know, at the time when they first came out, they looked radical with the screen and everything else. Today, they look like, you know, pretty sensible electric car and electric SUV. And that's where their volume is. And that's where the company's built on. So then the Cybertruck starts to just look like a halo product, an image tool to keep the original Tesla crowd happy. And, you know, that's one of the odd things about it. If they just built a, and I think at the original event, this was the feeling that we're going to see, was going to be a truck that looked maybe a little bit like a Model Y or something, you know, and that was just a kind of sensible heartland truck, and they would have sold bucket loads. And instead, they've done this eccentric stainless steel Cybertruck, which I think will be a, you know, a lifestyle choice for wealthy types.
Right.
Well, it has to be.
Yeah, I mean, it has to be. So let's get into this a little bit. So the powertrain, you can get a rear wheel drive, a dual motor, or a three motor. It's an 800-volt architecture.
800-volt architecture from the charging perspective.
Yeah. I guess you can get into this a little bit, but it's probably going to go anywhere from 0 to 60 in 6.5 seconds on the low end to what are they saying? 3.9 for the mid range, and then two something.
Yeah. Then 2. Stupid 6. Fast for the cyber beast.
Yeah. To 2.6 seconds.
Yeah. But let's, as always with Tesla, let's dig into some of the details behind this, because the rear wheel drive one, it says, which is, God, they do that thing. I was looking at the website, that probable savings nonsense. Okay. Purchase price, $61,000. And then they charge destination, they charge an order fee. So let's call it, it's basically giving me something like $63,000, $64,000. But that's not available till 2025, 250-mile range. And Tesla, from our experience of testing these things, the Edmunds EV range test, they always go on the high side. So, you know, I'd be surprised really if we ever see that or ever see that in volume. So
Right. Okay. You
can almost discount that. It's not going to arrive till 2025 anyway. I just don't see it. Then you jump.
So low 60,000 range, 250 mile.
Yeah.
Low $60,000 price range, 250 mile range, maybe a little less, you know, 0 to 60 in 6.5 seconds. Mm. But the towing capacity on that base model is what? It's about 7,500 pounds, right?
Yeah. And it's rear wheel drive. So, I mean, honestly, it's like the fable $30,000 Model 3 used to be. Yeah. You could buy one, but if you stood on one leg and blah, blah, blah. So, I mean, the heart of this is going to be the all wheel drive and the Cyber Beast, and the all wheel drive starts at $80,000. So call it like 82 ish on the road. And then that's on sale. Well, 2024. That starts to feel like a sensible proposition. 340-mile range, claiming 0 to 64.1, 112 mile an hour top speed. That's not unusual to limit the top speed of a truck.
Yeah.
And then 600 horsepower, 11,000 pound towing capacity. So, you know, there's a lot of like proper trucky stuff in this. And then you go to the Cyber Beast, which starts at 100 grand. And that's got, 845 horsepower, 130 mile an hour, 2.6 seconds to 60. Which again, you know, we're seeing this all the time with the, you know, with EVs. But so your heartland's going to be your all-wheel drive. So however you dress it up, you're going to be paying 85 grand for your Cybertruck if you want anything probably in the next couple of years.
Right. And then the Cyberbeast, the range is about 320 miles before you add the range extender in the bed of the truck.
Yeah. And then also that there's also some interesting stuff when you start getting into the into like the specs on this stuff. Because some of the accessories, because yeah, you've got the range extender, but you've also got stuff like you can have like a matte black wrap or a white wrap, or you can have like a cellophane. It's probably not cellophane, you know what I mean? A clear wrap, and which kind of begs the thing. They're making all these places. Oh, it's not going to scratch. It's dent proof. It's blah blah blah. But we're still going to charge you $5,000 for a cellophane wrap. So like, what's all that about? So there's a load of stuff that like the devil in the detail. There's a load of stuff that now he's going to start. People are going to start to say, well, you know, do I need to wrap my stainless steel? What happens when I go through a car park? How's he going to keep it, you know, keep it clean? What is that? Okay, car wash. Sorry, what does that look like? And
well, right. But, so they're offering this wrap or this paint protection film instead of paint. So they're saying, hey, if you bought a car and you paid for, listen, you buy a car, it comes with paint. You buy a truck, it comes with paint. But a lot of vehicles have a premium paint option that could be a few thousand bucks, depending on what it is. If you're, you know, buying a Ford, if you're buying a Porsche, there's obviously a big difference in that premium paint option. But he's saying instead of paint, we'll give you a wrap. We'll wrap it. Because paint doesn't really stick well to stainless steel, as anyone with a DeLorean has maybe figured out. Okay, so you can get it wrapped. You can get it wrapped in matte black. You can keep it stainless steel. You get it white, or you can just do the paint protection film and wrap the whole thing in clear.
The matte black actually looks pretty cool. I think it looks cool, and I imagine if I like had one, my family would love it. Like the kids would think it was the most amazing thing of all time.
I mean, because you're going to be able to buy the toys, they're going to be able to play with the toy and then go into the garage and see the real thing. Well, maybe not in the garage because it's massive, but somewhere on the street.
Yeah, it's not going to go
up
to the garage.
Two spaces. But honestly, it's what? It's as big as a F-150 Raptor, right? As far as like height, width, length, like it's, and I say Raptor only because it's taller and Raptor's taller, but it's basically that. It's got a 6'4", 6 foot bed, right? And 4 foot.
Yeah,
wide.
So that's kind of like, yeah, I mean, that's smaller than the bulk of the, you know, F-150 full size, but it's still, you know, and then you can lay the back down and get something longer in it. So, yeah, there's a little bit of a frunk as well. It's, yeah.
And then
I don't think, so go on.
And then there, you know, it's quick. He promised it'd be fast. It's fast. Certainly impressive. And then now they part of their video presentation where they were shooting it with guns and they were throwing balls at the glass and I don't know what term they're actually using. I don't want to say bulletproof. I don't want to say it's an armored vehicle, but the nature of the stainless steel and however thick gauge they're using can effectively stop a bullet. Don't get me wrong. It's going to screw up your truck. But you're gonna have. It's not like it's gonna ricochet off, and you know, it's not like you're throwing a kickball at it or a racquetball and it bounces away. It's still a bullet, you know. So I'm not saying you should shoot your truck if you get one.
But I was really intrigued by all that as well, because it's like they are making, like, you know, Musk in his kind of in his natural way makes these huge claims, and it almost sounded like, you know, if you're a local gangster or maybe a member of the police, you know, buy a Cybertruck, you'll be fine, and you know, even from a legal perspective, you know, you and I will have to deal with legals all the time. Like, does the first time somebody gets shot up in a Cybertruck, is, you know, is there a liability issue here? Because it's going to, you know, it's...
Will more people take shots at it if they see it because they know they're not going to injure somebody, or they think they know they're not going to injure somebody? Like, I wonder, well, listen, I don't know. It's an interesting selling point. I don't want to say armored vehicle because a proper armored vehicle has certain specs built in for like an explosion underneath it and whatever. So this is not that. He's saying stainless steel, tough stuff, can stop a, I don't know, a 45 or a 9mm, I think is what he said.
Yeah, but there's also like, there's been a bunch of stuff like on and the trouble is, I take everything so cynically that you see on X, but then he was like, oh, well, technically the rounds they were firing, they got some ballistic experts in. So, well, the rounds they were firing were this, they weren't really this. And
I understand. And I know you can nitpick it, but he's made his point. It's like,
he's made his point. It's fun. It's like, I'm glad it exists. Like,
yes, you made his point is it can take a few shots of something whereas most cars probably cannot. Right. Like that was the point.
I mean, I love that it exists, because the sensible business thing to do was to build, you know, a predominantly on-road truck based on technology that they had, and they would have sold bucket loads. And instead is like, no, I quite like the, you know, I bought the, because, you know, he bought the Bond Esprit, the late 70s Esprit, the submarine car from the Bond movie. Elon Musk bought that, and this was at the original event. I also had this like passion for, you know, the kind of wedge design of that era, the kind of Italian design, Giugiaro and all the rest of Bertone, all the rest of it. They're all into it. And it's, I just love the fact that it is this kind of like crazy billionaire who said, no, I'm not going to build I'm not going to do what's sensible. I want to build this. And I'm going to, and then, you know, he's got an army of people who have to realize the dream. And so it's great fun. And, you know, I kind of want one, to be honest.
I don't know that it's for me, but yes, it is fun in what he's doing and what he sort of executed as far as this truck. But I'm really I just want to find out, like, is it a cool truck? What is it like to drive? And is it fun to drive? Can it be used as a truck or a reasonable vehicle? I mean, can you see out of the back? What's going on with cameras? Can you park it? What happens when you got to go to Whole Foods or something? Like, what, like, is it a gimmick? Is it a toy? You know, like, listen, don't get me wrong. If you got the money and you go out and you buy yourself a McLaren 720S, the same questions apply. Like, okay, great. It's a phenomenal track car. It's amazing. But, you know, you got to be careful where you park it. It'll scrape the ground and it's tough to see out of. And you got to rely on the cameras and you hope everybody sees you because, you know, like, it's a supercar and you drive it that way, you know, to your, you know, special events on the weekend. Is the Cybertruck going to fall into that type of realm, or is it going to be the daily utility vehicle that it was sort of, I don't want to say was promised to be, but, you know, like, is it going to compete against F-150, Silverado, and Ram? Or is it going to just be this interesting toy like the Humvee, like the Hummer?
I think the reality is it's probably going to be somewhere in between. I don't think it's like a McLaren where, you know, it's a car for going to Cars and Coffee on a Saturday. I think this is much, obviously, much more real world. It'll do a lot of stuff. But I don't think if you're Ford, Chevy, or Ram...
You already know you're going to eat some of those McDonald's golden fries on the drive home. So, you may as well add an extra order just for that.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
You're looking at this and quaking. I don't think you're going to turn up on construction sites and see like a whole army of Cybertrucks sitting there, like, you know, hauling you know, hauling bags of cement. And, you know, we're not seeing that with Lightning yet, but that's obviously the, you know, the medium term goal, that, you know, it's a proper working truck. And that's why the Lightning and the Silverado and the Ram are all designed around, you know, traditional truck mores. So I think this is more like a Rivian, that it's going to be a cool toy, but I think you could live with, I mean, we'll see. The biggest problem is, though, they're massive. But then if you don't, you know, and it obviously won't go that far on a charge. But yeah, it's unfortunately, it's a rich person's toy rather than a working truck, which is a little bit different to what they originally pitched. And I think they've been communicating to investors in the markets that this is where they're going with it. So, you know, they at the moment, Tesla, I was talking to some execs from other companies about this, you know, Tesla is desperately pumping volume. They are desperately selling, you know, their market share is going down inevitably because more people are entering the market, but they're just desperately trying to get, you know, shift Model 3s, Model Ys, look at all the price cuts, you know, the lease rates are super cheap. And it's the brand is morphing from being this kind of aspirational luxury choice into basically a mainstream volume brand.
That's it. They're becoming an actual car manufacturer. They're doing what everybody else is doing. Yeah. And
they're advertising on YouTube, you know, like they always did this. We don't do advertising. Well, you do now.
Yeah, you do now. Now, there's going to be a lot of questions about build quality. And I guess the questions are going to be, listen, I get it. It's new. It's going to have some issues. Lucid has issues. Everybody has issues with new, you know, Ford's been making cars for over 100 years. There's still issues, right? So there's going to be that. But is it going to be okay, or how terrible is it going to be? Is it just going to be everyone they deliver is going to go in for warranty work? Like essentially where Lucid is right now, ultimately could be fixable. But I hate to say it, because the truck is so late compared to when they promised it. Is it still too early?
Yeah, I mean, that was Lucid's challenge. I think they just launched it too early. And I think in a candid moment, they'd probably accept that now. But I mean, Tesla's got a lot more experience than they had. If you think like the original Model S, the build quality wasn't great, but they had the market completely to themselves. Model 3 was the same. And it took them off. The first Model 3 that Edmunds bought was a bit of a shambles, but then it's got better and better. And the Model 3 that I owned as you know, predominantly the family car was fine. Not brilliant in build, but fine. But then again, like they could have just built on that experience and built a conventional truck. But what they've actually done is something, you know, so extreme that they've obviously had a lot of challenges. So it remains to be seen. I mean, like the fundamental hardware, the software, the, you know, the electric motors, they know what they're doing with the battery technology and all that stuff. I think it's going to be more in the physical build of a stainless steel truck that the challenge will be, more than, you know, they know what they're doing with battery technology. And it was interesting. We've just done, I think we talked about this last time, but we launched our Edmunds EV charging test. And if you look at the charging losses for Tesla, it's outstanding. Polestar's like 12% off the top of my head. And Tesla's almost zero. So that's about how much charge you're losing, how much efficiency you'll lose. So it's equivalent of spilling gas on the forecourt.
Yeah.
And Tesla's, I mean, there's a lot of things that Tesla gets right. So we will see. But yeah, it's a hell of a challenge, this truck. And I'd love to know what the margin is, if any.
Yeah, if any. Who knows? I honestly, I don't know if any EVs are really making any money for any car company. And
I mean, but again, apart from Tesla, because Model 3 and Model Y are, you know, are profitable, but everybody else is struggling.
Yeah. Well, it'll be interesting to see as these pop up on the roads. Being here in LA, I'm sure we're going to see them pretty soon. Listen, it's interesting. I'm not the first in line to get one, but that's fine.
I'd like one, but I'm not going to spend $80,000 on one.
What did Edmunds order? Now that we know what the specs are going to be, what are you guys trying to get?
Well, we're waiting, because we literally placed the deposit on the night of
the initial
launch. And I got wind last night of certain people getting a getting a sort of, I was just checking my emails as we were talking, nothing's come through yet, but I know a couple of people who've got like an updated email. Nothing's arrived yet. So then I think, I suspect we'll go all in, because I think from a kind of like storytelling perspective, you kind of going to want the cyber beast. So
I think you're going to want the cyber beast. You're right. I mean, you're going to want to start at the top and work your way back. First of all, the rear wheel drive entry level version is not going to be out for a couple of years anyway. So, you know, who knows, maybe even by then you're trading one for the other, but
honestly, I'm not sure we'll ever see that.
Yeah. When they were doing the Model S and stuff, they're like, "Yeah, we're just going to stop doing the small battery. Nobody's buying it. Like, we're going to the least expensive one." It's like, that's just not the audience. They thought the audience was going to be like, "Hey, everybody wants a $40,000 car." They don't. They all want a $90,000 car. So at least the audience who are buying it. So, and as you pointed out, you know, a fully loaded Lightning's $100,000. You know, the Ram EV is probably going to be $100,000.
Yeah, the Ram Charger, the thing is going to be, has to be that much, because you got an engine and a passive battery.
Yeah, the hybrid one, the Ram Charger, which I like the idea of that thing, but yeah, it's not going to be inexpensive. So you go all in, and then you'll have some fun doing some U-Drag videos with this, because we don't know if it turns at all.
Well, that was another thing, like Musk going on about, oh, it does this, you know, basically what he was describing was variable ratio steering. And he's got four-wheel steering, and he was describing it. It's steer-by-wire, and, you know, it's got variable. It's like, we're all watching it. That's basically variable ratio steering, and that's been around for, what, 25 years or something more?
Right.
And four-wheel steering's been around forever. So, yeah, everybody's, oh, my God, this is Reddit revolutionary. Not really.
Not really. Although, it's an interesting feature, and I get it. And maybe it was sort of necessary for what this vehicle to maneuver the vehicle around, they're claiming a
turning circle which is smaller than the Model S, and I can believe that if they've got four-wheel steering and stuff. So
so maybe it is interesting around it, or around a track, not just making a U-turn on your U-drag video, but just actually like around a track. It could be kind of interesting. I mean, it's going to have the power. It's just gonna, what is it going to feel like to throw around that kind of weight? Anyway, like you said, I think it's fun. I'm not sure how much more than that it's going to be, but I think it'll be interesting. It'll be kind of fun. By the way, the specs that we mentioned, obviously, you know, it's more expensive than what they initially thought. And then the specs are, I don't know, like the towing capacity and the payload is all just coming in a little bit less than what they thought. The numbers are fine, but if you want to nitpick the numbers, this truck versus that truck, I know that's what these truck companies do, you know, F-250, 350 Rams and stuff. I don't think it needs to do that. I don't think this is about making an electric truck that tows more than anything out there. I don't think anybody's going to care.
The only thing that made us laugh in the thing, and I forgot to mention this earlier, is we pioneered a thing, and it's on our Edmunds YouTube channel, about using the track to pull technology, you know, where we had a Rivian and a Lightning, and we did like the competitive track to pull.
Yeah.
And Tesla went and staged it. I think they even used the same color vehicles, and we were like straight onto it, because actually we're like, what are they quoting for the Rivian? And it was pretty close to what we were. And I think that's probably deliberate, because it was kind of a nice, like, it was a bit flattering that they'd obviously watched the film and said, like, we need to do that.
It was a little hat tip to you guys, I think. Yeah, it's a nod to you. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think they'd acknowledge it, but I was like, okay. getting a little bit of notice.
Yeah. And listen, it wasn't a bad idea, because now you guys don't really have to argue with them. You can go, it's a neat idea. Seems pretty accurate. The Rivian numbers were kind of what we were getting anyway. So, good.
We just need a Cybertruck to test it properly.
Now you guys can do it too and go, yeah, they did what we did. Yeah.
Yeah.
Makes sense. Good.
Yeah.
All right. So, we've got more stuff to get into. We're going to have to hold it for next week. We're kind of running out of time. Is there anything else we need to touch on real quick on our way out?
No, I think we're good. We can talk Tacoma. We could preview next week. We could talk Tacoma. We've got Kia EV9, which is super interesting. But yeah, new Tacoma, like small trucks. That was that's been a big deal for us. So we can hold that. We can hold that with bated breath for next week.
Did you guys drive the Corvette E-Ray?
Yes, we drove that a while ago. Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting.
We were just looking to spec one, actually. So we're thinking about replacing our C8 with one of those. So maybe we could get into that, how you'd spec it next week. That'd be fun. Because what original spec, when the guys know, it's like, oh, we can get like the highlighter yellow paint with red interior. And then a few other people in the office were like, maybe not.
All right. Well, you guys know where we are on social media. If you have thoughts on how Edmund should spec out their Corvette E-Ray, hit up Alistair on
Weaver on Cars.
Weaver on Cars. Hit him up and tell him how he should spec his E-Ray. All right, guys. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time, keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.
Haven't heard about the McCrispy yet? Well, then you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.